Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us for the weekly Worcester Nazarene podcast, a conversation with our pastors and leaders to help us along our journey of loving God, loving people, and living transformed. Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Worcester Nazarene podcast. So glad to have you here with us as we discuss our fourth and final message in the Extreme Generosity series. And today with us, we have Pastor Joel for the first time.
Thank you. Great to be on the pod.
It is.
I feel like I've arrived now.
It's good. I'm just waiting to actually be able to be a guest at some point because so far I've only hosted when I've done this.
You need to get grilled a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, we did our pilot episode that nobody saw with me in the guest chair, and apparently that didn't fly, so here we are.
But you'll get your turn.
But this is a little bit interesting because you did not preach on Sunday. However, the more I kind of listened to the message and worked through it, it really reminded me a lot of your actual story of how you not just ended up coming to the faith, but how you ended up in ministry, which, I mean, you're one of the few outside hires that we've kind of had. I mean, you were from within the church, but you came from the corporate world. You came from a whole different environment. So give me just a little synopsis of how you ended up here. Again, don't get too juicy in the details because I have questions for that later.
Gotcha. Well, real long story, brief for today. After Lisa and I got married, we were born and raised here, moved to Carolina, came back, both ended up working in places that didn't have a lot of employees with an individual that went to church here, Mark Day and Pam Offenier, invited us to the Easter drama, and we showed up for that. It was either the Friday or Saturday of the Easter weekend of 98, and have been here ever since.
Yeah.
Came back that Sunday, and it stuck.
Yeah.
That's how we came here, and then a couple years later, was very heavily involved with doing youth with Pastor Ben at the time, and really felt like the Lord was calling me into ministry. At the time, I was actually wanting to do sports ministry. That seemed like a natural fit for my background and stuff. I felt like the Lord confirmed ministry, yes, but not specifically sports. At that time, it was youth.
Yeah.
And that's how I ended up coming on staff then.
Yeah. And what were you doing beforehand? I mean, again, I don't need all the details, but like what was the world you were in?
Once we had moved back, I was working for a software company. Funny thing, big software tech company in the middle of Berlin, Ohio. Long story behind how that happened.
But,
I was doing some business development at the time that I stepped out of that to come to ministry.
And obviously in the late 90s, like that tech industry was just, the bubble had not burst yet. It was just booming. I mean, it was a huge deal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know in all humility, you don't want to say, but you were climbing within that as well.
And the people that have been around, they know my story by now, but I was chasing money and I was chasing titles and positions and loving Jesus, but I was still... That part of my life was still...
You were on the journey.
It was me focused, for sure,
Yeah. Well, so talking about what we've talked about with Extreme Generosity, obviously this has been a hallmark for Worcester Naz forever. And so my first question is with you kind of coming into this environment, so you meet Jesus, you have this experience with the Holy Spirit, and in you come to the church, and of course... Almost immediately, you're going to start hearing about generosity, about tithing, about giving. I'm just kind of curious, how did that initially hit you as, again, someone who had some church background, but not like that, not the full commitment type of background?
No, right. I understand. It actually, you know, if we were to talk about prevenient grace and get into that aspect of our faith, when we had moved back, in July of 97. And beginning of 98, we'd actually received a giving report from our church that we attended when we were in North Carolina. And probably the first giving report I had received.
Yeah.
That was like, oh, they do that? And received that. And this was before we even started coming to church here.
Yeah.
And I remember opening it and being internally embarrassed for my lack of generosity.
Yeah.
You know, in those days... If I had 25 bucks in my pocket at church, five might go in the plate and the other 20 was for lunch.
You know, that was
my mindset.
Yeah.
And so I can look back now and see how God was starting that process of making me aware of things even before coming to a true personal relationship with him. And then, of course, the Lord knew that he needed to do some work in me in that regard, just from how finances were going to change with Lisa coming home with the kids and then me leaving what I was doing and coming on staff and how generosity couldn't take a back seat
right.
in spite of those changes. And right. so he was faithful to do a lot of work
yeah.
and continues to.
Well, that kind of ties into my first actual question that I've gotten written down here. So talking out of 1 John 4:19, Pastor Drew out the other day, we love God because he first loved us. So when you look back at your decision to step out of the corporate world, and again, it wasn't just a decision, it was a calling. You felt
right,
called.
Right.
But when you looked at that final decision, how did the reality of God's love, not just duty, not just feeling obligated, but how did the reality of God's love shape that surrender, that moment of surrender right. for you?
Well, one I can remember one specific moment talking with Lisa in the front room of our house, you know, the room that nobody ever uses.
Yeah, of course.
The fancy room or whatever. And being in that room, just talking about the realities, the implications of stepping into ministry. And given my whole background of chasing money and going after that, an overwhelming peace, knowing that stepping into ministry, the financial piece of that would be so different, it was just going to be okay.
Yeah.
And again, I can see God's love for me and that giving me that peace because my natural human mind from all the previous years would not have taken to that peace.
Yeah,
would not
absolutely.
Have said, how is this going to be okay?
Right.
With the big difference, big changes.
Yeah. So in that idea, you know, that our first step isn't, as Rick Warren said, as he quoted, our first step isn't loving God, it's letting God love us. Mm-hmm. And so how did simply receiving God's love, again, that first, like you said, personal, actual, real relationship, how did that start shifting your priorities? Again, not just shame, not like, oh, I got that giving report and I feel ashamed, but mm-hmm. where you really started going, man, because of what God's done for me, here's what I want to do. Where did that really start to shift for you?
Well, I think it started to shift with the call in the ministry because we knew that the lifestyle changes that were going to happen.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, oh, I won't get the Mountain Dew. I was going to say the coffee, but I don't drink coffee. we're just not going to get this or do that. I mean, it was a drastic.
Mm-hmm.
But even just the peace that he continued to give us and the willingness. And for Lisa, I can't speak for her on a lot of details, but in general, God confirmed my call into ministry at a later date.
Mm.
She was trusting me and trusting my walk with the Lord and stepping into that. And she would say, without a doubt, she got that confirmation.
Yeah, yeah.
But even just how his love for us made those changes okay.
Yeah.
You know, started to see things from, I would say, a God perspective or heavenly perspective that toy, that position, that status, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. And even looking back, even now, having been so many years ago, some of the things that we were willing to do, that I was willing to do, and it didn't seem like a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised that it didn't seem like more of a big deal. And to me, that was God's love to me.
Yeah.
He was.
Well, and I think too, that speaks to kind of a shift of your center of security.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Going from things and prestige and status and money to my identity, my security is in Him.
Yeah.
And just that slow changing of hands
right,
in that.
Right,
no, I
absolutely.
Love that. And, you know, I got to say for Lisa, you know, I can appreciate being the slow yes person because I'm the slow yes person in mine and Kayla's relationship. She's the quick to move, quick to feel, quick to feel like the Holy Spirit's leading. And I'm like, oh yeah, but, and it takes me a minute.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that reality. So one of the things that, that Pastor talked about was generosity as a witness, as an evangelism tool. And that was really intriguing to me because I think we don't often think of that. Or if we do think about it, we think about it in a mercenary way that's not
right,
good.
Right.
But this idea that generosity is attractive and contagious and it draws people in. You know, I don't know anybody that doesn't like being around a generous person,
right.
even if they resent them for it, you know, whatever
right.
it may be. So have you seen that kind of generosity, not arguments, not you know, the typical kind of evangelism, but have you seen it open doors to conversations about Jesus or real transformation in your own journey, or whether that's you being the catalyst for that, or when you were kind of experiencing this transformation?
Yeah, I think I've experienced both sides of it, for sure. Definitely experienced that at times with people being generous to us and having to learn how to be a cheerful receiver as well, which that may sound weird to a lot of people, but it was hard.
Yeah.
As much as at one point I was chasing things, it was kind of hard to receive that mm-hmm. at times. And so that was definitely a work that God was moving and working within us. And as people would bless us in different ways, you know, there was, and it wasn't just with money. You know, we talk about all the T's, the times,
yeah, titles, yeah, treasures.
Yeah. You know, during times of walking through some infertility trials, you know, people giving their time to pray right. with us and cry with their, you know, their tears and their right. time was a big part of that. Having to walk through a cancer journey, you know, and people showing up and doing things,
yeah.
Giving their talents and that type of thing. So it's not always just been money, but it's been all those. And yes, all those are great examples that have been a blessing to us. And like Pastor said on Sunday, have spurred us on.
Yeah.
Not in an envious way, but just, hey, we need to make sure, even as pastors, that we're continuing right. to live this out. And
right.
and on the other side, maybe one of the biggest impacts I've seen is with our family and our kids. I think Pastor shared at one time, I don't know if I did, but we thought at one point it was important for our kids to understand tithing and us giving to the church. And we actually sat down one afternoon and shared with them how much that we did give.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they hear the word, but right, they don't really understand. They're right. kids. And when they saw them out, and this is not a pat on my back, but yeah. when they saw them out, it really kind of opened their eyes
right.
like, wow, this is significant. And so they saw, and I believe positively, in a positive way, saw mom and dad
yeah.
living this out. And I think that, and I see that now in my kids
yep, absolutely.
And the way that they're generous to others.
That's great.
I want to be a blessing.
So. Yeah. So obviously, like you had said, you know, you went from this place of, you know, advancement and raises and consistency and all those things to ministry, which again, we both know is the polar opposite of that. I mean, you not only are you taking a step down in salary, but the reality of, you know, if people aren't faithful, we're not going to get raised. I mean, that's just not consistent right. raises is just not right. a reality in ministry. And you know that right. signing up for it, you go into that. But one of the things I've always appreciated about you and Lisa is you never stopped being hospitable, you never stopped serving, you never stopped doing any of those things just because your financial situation changed. And so my question is, when, you know, Pastor talked about in 1979, you know, not having two nickels rubbed together, serving, you know, mm-hmm. things on paper plates and all that, what was kind of the start where you're at, start with what you have moment for you guys as God redirected you into that place where you just determined, like, we're still going to do this. We're still going to have yeah. people, and we're still going to have teens in our home. We're still going to be involved,
yeah.
even though our financial situation is changing. What was kind of that dig down moment?
There was a reality of us downsizing house when we moved into town to be a little bit closer to the church. And two things that I remember and will remember always was we'd stepped into junior high ministry. So we were doing a Bible study after school. I think it was on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And so it was the providing snacks and, you know, Pastor right. talked about his teens, you know, raiding their refrigerator, yeah. eating us out of, you know, house and home. And I remember, I won't say who it was, but there were at least a couple that would, teenage boys that would ask if Lisa was making cookies when they were deciding if they were coming to Bible study
right,
or not.
Of course.
So that, you know, that piece of it, that rang true when Pastor was sharing that story, because that was part of it for us. And then the other was hosting a small group,
yeah.
Plug for NAS groups. If you're yes. not part of one,
thank you.
You should be part of one because life changing. But the number of people that would be in our house every week, the number of kids that were
yeah. How many do you guys have at peak?
I don't think I should say because I don't want Children's Services.
No, see now
at my
it's
door.
Far enough past statute yeah. of limitations. You're good.
I think at one time we had 22 children, and the oldest was not above 10. So. They all still required a sitter,
yes.
you know, or multiples. So that was another piece of it, you know, in a house that wasn't that big and
yeah.
and that type of thing, but just felt the necessity of connecting with people, of that yeah. relationship piece and yeah. continuing to do that.
Yeah. In Corinthians 9, it talks about that God will generously provide all you need. And again, going from one side of the coin to the other mm-hmm. in all of this, was there a moment when that passage, that reality of God being your provider, stopped just being theory and really became a personal reality for you and Lisa? And how did God multiply in your life as you stepped out in yeah. faith, really?
Yeah. One of the things, there's two things that stand out as answers to that question. One, we think about the Israelites, and even how scripture says, you know, like their shoes didn't wear out all their years in the wilderness.
Yeah.
It's just amazing what God has done. Like, even in the fact that it took us 3.5 years to have our first child, in that time, we had siblings on both sides of our families that had children.
Yeah.
We had hand-me-down clothes, hand-me-down athletic shoes for so long, years and years and years. Like, yes, we buy clothes for our kids at times, but it felt like we didn't even have to clothe our kids because we had all these hand-me-downs.
Right.
And so I, in a kind of a crude way, kind of compare us to the children of Israel back then. Like, our clothes, they just kept coming.
Yeah.
I still remember the first time one of our kids, I think, was playing soccer, and our nephew had stopped playing soccer, so we didn't have any more leftover soccer cleats, and we had to actually buy some. And I was like, what do you mean we have to buy cleats? What is going on? So that's one way that saw that for sure, that God was just moving and working and taking care of us. Another thing was I had made the transition into ministry full-time, and a credit card statement had come, and I was always on top of those.
Yeah.
Somehow this one caught me off guard with the amount that was due.
Mm.
And I wasn't looking for money, but I was rifling through some files or whatever, and actually had found an expense check from my previous employer that I had never cashed.
Mm.
It was way past the time that most banks will cash it,
yeah,
that type of thing. So, well, I'm going to try anyway. I went to the bank. Somebody that attended our church was working at the bank, talked with their manager, and they still cashed the check.
Wow.
And it wasn't to the penny, but it was pretty close,
right,
to the amount of that bill is what that check was.
Yeah.
And that was one of those aha moments, like, wow,
yeah,
God is going to take care of us.
Yeah.
And we've never been left wanting.
Yeah.
I mean, and honestly, a lot of a lot of our wants were still met through that time. And
yeah,
you cannot talk me out of it, that God, you can't make me believe God won't be faithful,
right,
through it all.
Right, because you've seen it.
I've seen it. I've lived it.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that really prompted me to want to have you guest on this is obviously because I do know your story and I've heard it over the years.
A lot of times.
But here's the thing I love, though. The thing that I love is that it is still an ongoing story. You know, yeah, absolutely. you have this moment that you point to of transitioning out of the corporate world into ministry and that big yes, but I've watched you in the little yeses over the years and just the consistency and continuing to follow what God has called you to, and not just you, but your wife and your whole family by extension. And so I love that it's still a current day story. You're not just pointing back to what was, it's what you're currently living out. But one of the stories that Pastor touched on is the story of the rich young ruler. And it instantly made me think of you, not because I'm like, oh, Joel, you know, was on Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. There's a really old reference for some of you.
Was not close to that.
But what we often miss in this story is this wasn't just a guy coming to Jesus and Jesus saying, here's what you have to do to get salvation. The guy came to him and said, basically, I'm doing all the right things. What else do I need to do? And it said that Jesus loved him. Jesus actually had affection for him in that moment and said to him the same thing that he'd said to Peter, the same thing that he'd said to John, the same thing that he said to Matthew, sell everything you've got and come and follow me. This was an invitation to become the 13th disciple.
Right.
And he rejected it. And the scripture says, because he had many possessions.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's because those things had him.
Right.
And so, does that story kind of hit close to home to you? Because again, you were faced with that same choice.
Right.
Jesus came to you with true affection and said, give up what you have, give up your plans and desires and come and follow me. And you said yes. So what were the possessions internally, tangible or intangible, that were hardest for you to loosen your grip on and trust him with in that moment?
Well, that's a good question, Nate. Isn't that what I'm supposed to say? That was a really good question. There were definitely, it seemed, at a point, it seemed very natural just to do it, just to say okay and let go. I know that's not the case because I know my own story, but honestly, a lot of it came from examples around me.
Mm.
You know, as that time when I was still working outside the church, but volunteering a lot here, like watching your dad and knowing his story too, and you know, Pastor Ben at the time and others that were around, and just seeing the joy as they served Jesus and surrendered everything they have. And not just financially, but just themselves, really helped me in that transition.
Yeah.
Really helped me to step into that. But I would say, just now thinking about it too, there was a, you know, if we talk about our doctrine and we talk about salvation and sanctification, there was a time, I do remember, don't remember the day, don't remember the message, probably had something to do with surrender. Cause I do remember, being on the south side of the, of our previous campus and feeling impressed that if God was going to be first in my life, that meant finances too.
Yeah.
And that was where we started tithing.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably wrestled with it a little bit, but shortly after that, and literally that, that first tithe check that we wrote, yes, we still did write checks.
Right. And,
some people still do today. It's, it can still happen. I literally felt a weight lifted that Sunday morning. And so that was a big transition time too. Cause that was like, again, it was another moment where I've got this peace where I know normally I wouldn't have it.
Yeah.
And it had to be God, God moving and working in me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I
guess that's a great answer. That's exactly what I'm looking for.
That answers what you're...
Absolutely. So I do want to ask, and again, you've mentioned before, you know, Lisa has her own story of this journey, and I don't want you to tell her story. That's her story to tell. But I do want to ask you, you know, as the jump first person in the relationship, how was it that God kind of shaped you and molded you to be able to help bring Lisa along in that process? Because again, that's a scary thing. I mean, she didn't sign up for that.
Right,
she didn't sign up, you know, you had, you guys had your life, you had what you had planned, you'd gotten married, you know, you're trying to start a family. And then all of a sudden, hey, the Lord's calling me to this. I mean, that's quite the bomb to drop. And so what were some of the things that the Lord did in you to help be patient and not rush ahead, but still he's called me to this and we got to go.
Well, you'd have to ask her if I was patient.
Yeah.
With her.
Well, she's still around. So, you know,
I just blame it all on God.
There you go.
All,
there you
all
go.
His fault. No, it was, yeah, I would like to think that I handled that really well and smooth and did this great job in leading her into that. And I don't really don't know that I could, if I did anything, it was truly God working through me because it was almost like I couldn't get there fast enough to do this.
Yeah.
And I think even some of that was from the Lord, because had I truly like sat around and thought about it and count, you know, not that we didn't count the cost, but if I just allowed my what ifs to start
getting
going crazy
up
in my head,
the numbers,
it might've been easy to put pause or even stiff arm the Lord. And so I think even with the selling of our house at the time and the amount of money that we made off of that, like, those were all things that I really believed the Lord was in, how quickly it happened and provided really the nest egg for her to stay home.
Right.
That was a big part of it that we had both committed that when we did get pregnant then with our first, with Hannah, that she was going to stay home with her and we were going to do whatever we had to do to make that happen. And the Lord was faithful in that, even the way he provided ahead of time to make that happen. So I don't know that there was this big like, Joel leading Lisa into that.
Just taking the next step.
Her walk with Jesus was so strong.
Yeah.
And she was so, so comfortable in that and so dependent on the Lord in the best of ways that she was trusting him more than she was trusting me.
Yeah. That's great.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because if you trust me more than him, you're going to get let down.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. So last question here, and then we'll close up, but we ended with that declaration, because I have more, I'll return more, serve more, give more. So in this season of your life, at this point in the journey, looking past over these, what has it been, 21 years.
21 plus, yeah.
Okay.
In the vocationally.
In this season of your life, what does return more, serve more, give more look like for you personally and practically? And we're not looking, we're not saying you're patting yourself on the back, but I want to hear it, honestly.
No, I think it's having eyes open where maybe you wouldn't naturally. Like, like for us, the tithe issue, it's not even an issue. It's who we are.
Right.
We desire to do it. It's not, you don't have to convince me to do it.
I remember hearing a comedian once say that tithing is not giving, it's just not stealing.
Yeah.
And so it's just the baseline. Yeah.
Like,
got that.
That's not even a... that's not even a debate. We don't even talk about it. But I think it's just looking outside the box as far as giving and And that's not, again, that's not just financial.
Yeah.
That's with everything. My kids have challenged me at times on that. Not like personally to my face, but just watching them and seeing how they've stepped up. Mm. And as they were old enough to start taking ownership of those things and, you know, whether it's looking for somebody to, you know, maybe we've, our family, it's funny, if our family's all home, our driveway looks like a used car lot. But, you know, if, even if it's looking like to bless somebody, one of us got a different vehicle and we want to bless somebody with one. Or even as we're coming into the blessing season and looking at Christmas jars and how can we be blessing that way? Like my kids, who are, they're adults now, but they stepped in and they're suggesting things and they're leading the way.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's sometimes just shifting where our gaze is at and where we might not normally think about stepping in and blessing somebody. I think that's one way that it's looking these days. Because a lot of those first steps are have been settled
long behind you. Yeah,
years and years. And then just if God wants us to do more, we do our best to be obedient. Right.
But it's a yes, one way or the other.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's great. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us for this. And thank you guys for sitting in with us. And hopefully you're going to have a great Thanksgiving. And we'll see you guys on Sunday.